Karibuni Rafiki, welcome to the Mambo Jumbo podcast with me, Sonia, and
Chance.
And how are you doing this week?
I had a very busy week. Like, I've been working back to back.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I'm so tired.
Feeling here. Exhausted.
How's your week?
Yeah, hectic. It's always back to back. So,
yeah.
I think I'm used to it, but it's just
the body.
Yeah, I think I'm just tired. But we're surviving.
I know, yeah.
Especially with this economy, you gotta do what you gotta do.
Even if it's three jobs.
Yeah, three jobs, I'll probably pass out. Two is my limit.
I think.
If I add any more to my plate, I think I'm gonna...
Sorry, I've gotta move the mic.
I don't think I'll be able to make it.
Okay, there we go. No more spots. Okay, what is our topic today?
Our topic is just unpopular opinion and basically what's going on around the world.
Yeah.
Because like some opinions we might say, some people might not like it. Yeah, that's how I feel like. So it's just gonna be the state of the world and what's going on. So how do you feel about that? What is some of the stuff that has been bothering you that's going on around the world?
I'm not like I speak about politics, but like I'm not more into politics because like I feel like people have their own opinions, their own comments, and how things should be, and how each country should run. I think one of the issues that like this whole last week and this week caught my eye was what happened to the doctor in India.
In an infuriating tragedy in India, a 31-year-old female intern
was raped
to death at the hospital where she worked after working 36 hours straight. Doctors examined the body and found 150 milliliters of semen in her body. On August 8th, after completing her internship, she plans to watch the Olympics with her colleagues in the seminar room. She was the only one left to rest after her colleagues left. At 7 a.m., her body was found partially naked, her legs bent 90 degrees backward, with nearly 120 wounds all over his body, lying miserably on the floor of the seminar room. At first, the hospital claimed she had...
At first, they had said that she unalived herself, which was false.
I can't imagine how desperate she must have been at the end. Even more hateful is the inaction of the local police. Only one person was arrested after the incident. The suspect is Roy, a former hospital cook who now works for the police. Scratches on his arm and a Bluetooth headset at the scene connected to his cell phone further confirmed his connection to the crime. And despite his arrest, many believe others were involved. The director of the hospital, who was close to Roy, was simply transferred without any consequences, and the victim's families, fearing evidence had been tampered with, are now demanding an investigation by the Central Bureau of Investigation, CBI.
I think that was very... I think that is like one of the things as a woman, I was like, I'm very scared of the future. Like, if I sit down as a woman, I'm like, especially in India, like I was going through some of their laws and like just doing a bit of research, and like most of their policies, like most of the human rights, do not favor women.
They don't.
It's it's really horrible because we have like women who are in business sectors, into Bollywood sectors, women who are paving into medical, women who are trying to make it as content creators or influencers, and but then the lack of safety around these people, like around women, like there's no safety at all, and I think it scares me. Like in 5 years, in 3 years to come, if this is not looked into, it's something that it's gonna get horrible, right? But then I was scrolling through Instagram, and I think they came up with this system where it's like a 211 emergency.
Yeah.
I think I don't know how they are calling it, but it's like a number, like three numbers for the like emergency. If you're like, if you feel
so
unsafe.
It's a hotline, basically.
I think it's a hotline.
Yeah.
If you feel unsafe in an emergency, if you need medical, like it's like basically 911.
Okay.
And I'm like, didn't you guys have this system before?
No, but then if you, because one thing I like before, like I used to like enjoy looking into politics, learning about history and stuff, but it comes to a point where like, me watching sometimes the news is difficult for me because like the stuff that you're seeing, it's so unfair. The politics is just, it's crazy. It came to a point where like I just had to stop looking at it because like it just affects your mood, right? It affects like how you see the world, and then you're just seeing people just like being mistreated. And like, speaking of India, India has always been like that. Even like culturally they favor a boy more than a girl, right? You look at even back in the days, like what is this UN I went into India, and then they were like sterilizing women without their consent.
Yeah.
So that's another thing. So like women in India, like, have
and
never
they've,
had their
they've lived all their lives fighting for their rights.
Yeah, and also like yeah. It came to a point where they would kill, like, if they knew they were having a female as a child, as their firstborn, they would kill the girl. So it's always been like that. They always favor girls more above than, I mean, they favor boys more than girls. Even like when it came, even mother-in-laws were like, they'll ask the doctor, they always ask her, what is the gender? What is the gender? Because again, first of all, in India too, like as a woman, you're the one paying the guy like for
dowry.
Yeah, you pay for dowry. Like,
what is that about?
That's another thing too, right? So then like families taking loan and that. So I think like that's the pressure. That's why like most of them too, they don't want to like have girls either. You know?
Yeah. And anyway, you know, I believe a child is a child.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we're evolving. Mm-hmm. We're like in the 21st century. Mm-hmm. And I think as a country, they can do better. That's what I'll say. As a country, as a system, they can do better. They can help raise women. Women these days are becoming presidents. Women are taking over in the parliaments. Women are ministers. Women are taking over the medical fields. And I think if you do not provide the protection and the safety in your country, then you're failing as a country. Mm-hmm. A woman makes the society. Society without a woman is not complete.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they are failing in that sector. Mm-hmm. And I love their culture. I love their music. I love their movies. I love everything about the country. But when I look into the system and everything, I just feel like as a country, it has failed to protect women.
But I don't think it's just even India. You look at the United States and what's going on too, right? Women like with abortion laws, like I should have the right to choose what I do with my body, right?
Yeah.
And then there's some points like birth control and stuff like that, right?
Like, it's no longer free.
It's no longer free, right? And also, like, if I'm deciding to terminate a pregnancy, like, sometimes it's not even just because, like, I want to terminate it. Sometimes it's a health condition that I have to terminate that pregnancy. So, like, what does that say? So I have to keep the other child, like, and endanger my life?
1 year ago this week, the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. Now, at least 15 states have banned most abortions. And even in cases where people could legally be entitled to the procedure, they're unable to get one. These are a few of the known stories of the patients who, over the last year, were denied abortions, fled their home states for the procedure, or performed it themselves. The first story to shock the nation was that of a 10-year-old.
She was grieved.
Fled Ohio soon after the state banned most abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy. As abortion flickered in and out of legality in Louisiana, a doctor treating a patient who had their water break early in pregnancy said that the patient was, quote, forced to go through a painful hours-long labor to deliver a non-viable fetus. She also hemorrhaged nearly a liter of blood. In Wisconsin, a woman bled for more than 10 days after hospital staff refused to remove fetal tissue from her incomplete miscarriage. And in Ohio, a woman was sent home from the hospital after a miscarriage, still bleeding and without medical attention. Another Ohio woman was blocked from getting an abortion in the state, even after tests revealed that her fetus had kidney failure and heart defects. Continuing the pregnancy put her life at risk, so she fled to Michigan. In Missouri, Melissa Farmer was almost 18 weeks into her pregnancy when her water broke. There's practically zero chance that she would ever give birth to a healthy baby. Worse, if she continued the pregnancy, Farmer risked her own health. But she couldn't get the procedure in Missouri, and hospitals in nearby Kansas and Illinois also refused to help. She ended up having to travel to an abortion clinic in Illinois. During an ultrasound, Nancy Davis found that her fetus had a condition that leads babies to die soon after birth. She couldn't get an abortion in her home state of Louisiana, so she traveled more than 1,400 miles to get an abortion in New York. Over in Ohio, court documents listed out numerous people who showed up at abortion clinics. There were two women who were denied treatment for cancer while they were pregnant. Another patient said she would drink bleach if she couldn't get an abortion. Finally, two children had to flee the state for abortions after getting pregnant through rape. In Florida, a middle school student who had
she was raped
was due to the state's 15-week abortion ban. In the first lawsuit of its kind, five women who had been denied abortions sued Texas in order to clarify what medical emergencies could qualify someone for an abortion. One woman, after being diagnosed with a medical condition that made a healthy delivery impossible, developed a 103-degree fever and life-threatening sepsis. In Oklahoma, a 25-year-old woman with a molar pregnancy, that is, a cancerous pregnancy that will never result in a baby, was told to wait in a hospital parking lot until she started crashing. These are just a few of the many stories of denied abortion since the overturning of Roe v. Wade. And it doesn't look like the stories will stop.
Like, and endanger my life? Does that make sense? Like, why would I bring someone, like, I end up bringing that person and I might not even make it to see that person that I'm bringing.
I think they made an exception where it's, if it's like your health is threatened, you are able to terminate.
The United States, like, you even have to go to other, like, other states to see if it's legalized. And then sometimes it's not. And some of them are even flying here to Canada just to get those rights. And then you have to pay out of pocket because everything in the States.
But here in Canada, it's so funny. Here in Canada, like it's actually covered in some provinces.
No, I don't know. About
like here, yeah, it's covered.
No, I don't know anything like here regarding.
Here it is actually covered. Like even contraceptives are covered. Mm-hmm. Like as a woman, you have a right to go to a healthcare clinic.
Yeah.
And get like those pills. You know, so it's covered. Frankly, and I think I was surprised just a little bit.
Yeah.
But then I remember when I took it just to control my menstrual cycle, I didn't have to pay for it at all. Mm. It was all covered.
But Canada, the health system, yeah, it's good. We have universal health care, but then it comes to a point also, like when you're in those waiting rooms, why am I there for an hour in there and I still haven't seen a doctor? Can you believe it? Like last time I went with Haziz. And then at that time, they were still little, right? So then I was like, my mom was in Africa and stuff. So like, I was like with them. So then I had to go to I had an appointment with the doctor and stuff. Like, so when and this, mind you, this was an appointment. Mm-hmm. So it's not like I'm walking in. This was an appointment that I booked. Mm-hmm. And I went in, I went there like maybe like 5 minutes early before like my time, right? I go in there, like, tell me why, like, I sit there for like at least 30 minutes waiting for you. And then the doctor comes in, and then, you know.
And they stay for 5 minutes.
Exactly. And then the thing is, you know, kids will tell you the truth. Shan Aziz, you tell him, well, you come here 30 minutes late. And then he's looking, he's like, how do you know? You're so smart. You can't. He's like, no, you are late.
He's not smart, he's tired. He wants
to go
home.
Yeah, we wanted
now.
To go
he's
home.
Sick.
Like, why are we waiting so long for, like, the time is just.
It is. And then, like, shifting gears, the issue of racism.
In what regards? Because racism exists everywhere.
Everywhere. I'm talking about systematic racism. I'm talking about. I'm just talking like racism in general.
Let me tell you how I feel about racism.
I don't know. How do you feel about this issue?
I feel like, especially as Black people, no matter what we do, no matter where we go, we always gonna face racism. It's like we've done something, but we've never done anything to oppress other groups. But like the way we get treated, we get treated like shit. Like we are the scums of the earth, basically. No, but we had. Nobody values us. Nobody values Black lives. So, like, you look at history, we have never done anything. So, like, sometimes I'm like, I have to look back and I'm like, what have we done to you? Did we ever enslave you? No. Did we oppress you? No.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know, like, what it stems down to, but I also feel like, I think it's also fear, right, of the unknown. That's what it is, too.
I am so scared about that.
Yeah.
I remember the thing is like with racism, it's like it's a constant reminder. Do you get?
Yeah.
It's like a constant reminder that you do not belong.
I'm okay with that.
And like, no, I'm okay with it. But then it's so funny how like the people that are treating, like it's not everyone. Some of the people that are treating us that way, when they go to our own countries, we treat them as if they are God.
Yeah,
and that
white
disturbs
savior
me.
That's another
yes,
thing. White
like
savior
that
complex.
Disturbs me. I'm not coming from a bad place. I'm not like coming for anyone, but it's just looking back, and I'm like, in our own countries, we are treated even in our own countries.
Yeah.
We are still even treated as nothing.
That's
the
what
people that do not even belong. They don't even have citizenship. They aren't born there. They don't know the culture, the language. Mm-hmm. They're treated better than the people of the land.
But then I feel like. Some Black people, they're very stupid. I'll just be honest, like straight up with Black people. Like some of us lead with, what is this? We lead with emotions. We're not critical. Some of us are not critical thinkers. Like we're not thinking outside the box. Cause like the most like hate sometimes you receive from your own people. You'll be trying to do good, but then your own people will be your downfall. Look at all the history of all the revolution leaders in Africa. Look at it. It's always been your own people like assassinating you, killing you. That's how it is. Like that's why the West will always have power, because us as a collective, we don't even look at ourselves as a collective.
No, we don't.
Because like we are like in competition with
our own people.
Like even with leaders, look at it. Like why are you getting into power like for 20 years? At some point, like you have to give room for other people to grow.
I can't say the name. I feel like
Robert Mugabe. That's the one. And Museveni,
I can't
whatever
his name is. Since our parents were little.
My mom was still a child and he's still president until this day. Does that make sense?
It doesn't make sense. And then they still want their sons to be the next president.
You know the thing I hear about Africans? Like if you look at all the presidents, how they got into powers, everyone came in with a vision of bringing their people to power and giving their people a better opportunity than what they have received, right?
Mm-hmm.
Robert Mugabe got into power like, what is this, fighting for the Zimbabwean people, right? But then look how it turned out to be later on. That's why I said at some point, like as a leader, you have to know when to leave that chair. You can't stay in that chair for that long. You need someone else to come in and bring new ideas. That's how you evolve as a nation, mm-hmm. as a country as well.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to, I just look at the history and stuff. I look at Gaddafi, what he was trying to do, like bring the African to bring their gold together,
mm.
so they can trade in gold, mm. and Africa would have become a superpower. But then think about it, the West sees it
as a continent.
Why was Muammar Gaddafi killed? Muammar Gaddafi was murdered because he, along with the other African heads of state, were about to bring into existence Africa's first central bank. They were erecting a central bank in Africa, which was going to do what? Back its money to the resources under the ground in Africa. Now, what would that have done to the global economic order? Remember, the United States dollar isn't backed on any natural resource. The British pound isn't backed on any natural resource. The Canadian dollar, the European Union, their currency isn't backed on any natural resource because Europe doesn't have a lot of natural resources. Africa does. So if they would have been successful in creating a central bank of Africa, coming up with a unitary currency, and then backing that currency to the material wealth under the soil, they would have bankrupt every other economic system in this world, from America to Europe to China. That was revolution. And that's why Muammar Gaddafi had to be assassinated, because he was about to help the African heads of state eliminate modern slavery and neocolonial.
Been so powerful.
Africa is so enriched with resources
and minerals.
Minerals, resources. Congo alone has most of the resources.
But look what is happening in Congo right now.
Oh God, that one is just.
That one is like every time I go on social media and like I see. Okay, so like for me, how I feel, I've never been to my country, and my parents are from Congo,
yeah,
right? And I'm a proud Congolese. I love the food.
Congolese are very proud.
Yes, I love everything about my country.
Yeah. How do you feel in the state of Congo, how it is? Because you look at Mobutu, his policies, just... Congo, like...
When I look in five years...
I'm gonna put the videos for you to understand
when
why she's feeling the way she's feeling.
When I have kids,
don't worry, they'll see.
I will not have a nation to show my kids where I'm coming from.
So if you guys.
It is something that. If it, like, I don't like talking about it because then I'm so mad. I'm not even mad at the people. I'm not even mad at. I'm mad. Have you seen those kids?
Mm-hmm.
Those women.
Mm.
God. It's like your country is not even able to provide the safety that you need as a city.
They assassinated your first popular leader, Mr. Lumumba.
People of Congo never stood a chance.
Is with children polluted. Everyone there is being slowly poisoned to death by cobalt mining operations. That's the truth that the stakeholders at the top of the chain don't want us to know, but that's the truth.
Because my people are suffering.
You can't forget.
tell that he's Congo.
I think about when, like, when we even want to talk about what's happening, I even like want to talk about what's happening now. But then it's like, I want to talk about it because I fear for my kids. I don't even have kids yet, and I fear for myself. Mm-hmm. In 5 years to come, I'm going back to where my parents are from. I'm going back to where my blood is from. You know, like they say, blood is thicker than water. Mm-hmm. And I think I feel like that because, like, that's the land where my dad grew, my mom comes from. It's the land where I'm looking to go back and be like, this is where we, like, this is our family home, this is like our ancestral home.
Yeah.
And I can't. I'm so scared that by the time I get there, it doesn't exist.
What is left? There won't be.
There won't be anything at all.
Because, like, at this point, like, you look at Congo could have been like a great nation. Congo has, like, most of the gold is imported from Congo. And most of this, like your phone that you're using right now, that you have, it's coming from Congo. The parts are coming from Congo. And then you see the people, what they have to do to get that. Why we even have phones in the first place. And you see what they're getting. They're not getting anything.
There's like that viral video of like those kids that like were chained.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows like how they've been rolled down in those caves.
Mm-hmm.
To go and pick those gold, right? And then like this earthquake, and then those kids, and then like, it's showing how those kids are not coming out of those caves. So bad. I'm so mad. I don't even know how I feel about Congo's situation. I'm just like, I don't even want to talk about it. Like every time someone starts that talking, I'm so scared.
That's the one thing I said about, like, you see African countries and us as black people, we are so stupid. Because, like, look at that. Who's attacking Congo? Who's helping the West?
Kagame is actually one of Africa's biggest problems. Because Congo is the biggest resettlement of Africa that causes Africa never to unite. And Kagame is the reason why we've got the Congolese struggle.
The DRC, my basic understanding is that it's the wealthiest country
in Africa,
on the continent,
in the world, in the world, yeah.
It's the wealthiest country in the world from a natural resources perspective.
100%.
And you're saying Paul Kagame has a part to play in that.
Yeah, people don't understand that we always hear about the Rwandan genocide.
Mm.
The Rwandan genocide was started by Paul Kagame. And he started the Rwandan genocide because he wanted to take power by force in a country that would have never elected him into power, because he came from the minority Tutsis who used to be supported by the colonizer and used to be the administrators on behalf of the colonizer. So for Paul Kagame to come back as a Tutsi to come and take power in Rwanda, he needed to do something. And what he did is he started the genocide. He started the genocide by bringing down a plane that had two presidents, Hutu presidents, the Burundian president and the Rwandan president. Paul Kagame and his RFP forces shot down the plane when it was landing back in Rwanda from actually an AU meeting.
Mm.
And when that plane came down, then it inflamed the Hutu people who knew that they were RFP fighters who were trying to take power by force.
Mm.
And so they began to fight against Tutsi people who they felt wanted to come and take over power. While they were doing that, Paul Kagame himself sent his forces to murder his own Tutsi people on a whole scale level to make it look like a genocide, so that he could then have his forces come into Rwanda and take over power militarily under the guise of stopping a genocide against Tutsis.
These are all things that are
well documented.
Jeez.
It is actually something that the International Court of Justice wanted to persecute him for.
Mm.
And then the Americans covered up for him and the French covered up for him so that it wouldn't come out. But Paul Kagame came into power by murdering his own people. Then when he did that, he then took Laurent Kabila, who was now living in Rwanda, to go and take over power from Mobutu Sese Seko.
These are the leaders in the DRC.
This was in the DRC. And the arrangement that he had with Mobutu is, once you're in power, you need to bring some of my own people into your system. And the reason why he wanted to bring his own people into the system is that the Tutsis see themselves as a superior people to Bantus. And so they want to reinstate the Tutsis see themselves as a superior people to Bantus. And so they want to reinstitute something called the Mapororo Tutsi Empire that is going to rule over Central Africa and the Great Lakes. Because if you look where they came from in Uganda, Museveni is Tutsi. And he is the one who trained together with people like Paul Kagame in Tanzania, together with our liberation fighters. And when they came from those liberation camps, then Museveni went and took power from Obote, and then he put people like Kagame and other and the Hutus and the Tutsis into his army and intelligence. They then started murdering non-Tutsis who wanted power in Uganda, because they were majorities. And that's how Museveni becomes the president of Uganda as a Tutsi. And then he begins to assist Kagame together with the Europeans, the Americans, to then create a force that is going to take power in Rwanda. And then they must take power in Rwanda, instill a Tutsi in Burundi, and instill a Tutsi in Congo. So when they then succeeded in getting Kabila into power, Kabila refused to put Tutsis into his government. And when he refused, then Kagame and Museveni then sent their armies and rebels into Congo with an intention to remove
Kabila.
Kabila then ran to SADC. And that time SADC had an organ, or the military institution was called the organ, which was being headed by Mugabe. And he said, listen, they want to overthrow me. And he gave them the reasons why they want to overthrow. Mugabe sent a fact-finding mission that it consisted of Zambians, Namibians, Angolans, South Africans, and everybody from SADC region. And he realized that this was actually a problem. So they went to Uganda, they went to Rwanda, they couldn't find Museveni when they went to Uganda, they couldn't find Kagame when they went to Rwanda, but they got information that there was going to be an overthrow of Kabila, and then the UN was going to be forced to actually come up with a policy that says Congo must be broken down into five countries.
Jeez.
The five countries would then be easier to loot for the West through Uganda, Rwanda, and their own people that they would have placed within the Congolese system. Then Zambia and Zimbabwe came up with a counter proposal, but they also sent the armies of the Namibians and the Angolans to go and stop Kagame from overthrowing Kabila. They were able to repel Kagame and Museveni's troops to go and stop Kagame from overthrowing Kabila. They were able to repel Kagame and Museveni's troops. And so Kabila was not overthrown because of that. For that reason, and us taking land in exactly the same time, the Western world came together and imposed sanctions on Zimbabwe. Because they said that this military that was used in Mozambique, that also participated in Angola, and now is coming to Congo, is becoming a hindrance to imperialism. So we need to break the power of the Zimbabwean military. Let's put them under sanctions. So that's what caused the sanctions. So when that happened, it was fortunate that enough war had been undertaken by the Zimbabweans, the Namibians, and the Angolans for there to be people within the Kagame and the rebel movements who agreed to the Sun City Accord. And that's why you had peace in Congo at the Sun City Accord that was then brokered by Thabo Mbeki. But remember, when Zimbabwe...
Broken by Thabo Mbeki?
Brokered.
Brokered, okay.
Yeah. But remember, Thabo Mbeki was able to come and assist in negotiations, but Nelson Mandela had refused to go to Congo and assist Kabila on instruction of the Americans. The Americans said, you don't go there. But there is allegations that while all this fighting was happening, Executive Outcomes had people assisting Kagame and Museveni and the rebel movements to try and overthrow Kabila. So Kagame was being assisted. Museveni was being assisted by ex-SADF forces who are now calling themselves the mercenaries or the Executive Outcomes. And I think you've seen the video of Saima that talks about how black people were infected with HIV and how Saima went through SADC to kill certain people.
Rwanda. I know. And then they have the nerve to do that. You know what irritates me the most too? Because who's this? My mom, she was in Burundi during the genocide, and people would forget about Burundi, suffered a genocide as well, right? And where did they run to? They ran to Congo to flee. And then you guys are doing, you run these people, Congo and Burundi people, they were all running there.
It was like a safe haven.
Exactly. I wouldn't have been here today if like my mom didn't go to Congo and run for refuge. And then you see the people like they, and then you see what they're doing just because of what, just to have a little money in your pocket. So you overstep everyone that's at the bottom. Instead of enriching your countries and being able to run it by yourself. You look at some of the Western countries, they're starting to evolve, like Mali.
Right.
And Niger, they're starting to evolve. Because like they're taking that power back. You can't be giving the power to the West. Like at what point? Like France's electricity is coming from African country. France has like, they're getting billions of dollars each year. It's going back to France, not in back into Africa. So does that make sense? And then they call
this is a banknote from Senegal, Paris another from Congo. They look nothing like each other, yet they are part of the same scheme. A scheme that pegs both currencies to the euro, a rate determined by the French treasury. The issue at stake is the apex of French policymaking, the CFA franc. Using it, France controls the monetary sovereignty of 14 nations, making up nearly 200 million people. These countries include Benin, Burkina Faso, Cameroon, Chad, Congo, Equatorial Guinea, Gabon, Guinea-Bissau, Ivory Coast, Mali, Niger, Senegal, Togo, and the Central African Republic. And while these nations have a seat at the United Nations and wave their independent flags, it is only the face of imperialism that has changed. The conduct of business has largely remained the same. The big difference is that imperialism used to be spread through tanks. Nowadays, it comes through banks. The most effective forms of control are those that are invisible. Recognizing this, in 1958, France hijacked authentic decolonization by installing local collaborators and granting them statehood. These collaborators became the custodians of France's neo-colonial empire by maintaining the franc zone and French military bases. Only Guinea turned down the offer. Its leader, Sékou Touré, declared that his people preferred being poor in freedom than rich in slavery. Guinea thus rejected the CFA franc, seeking to develop its own currency. France felt it needed to make an example of Guinea, so it cut pensions to war veterans, dismantled Guinea's power grid, and then attempted to block its UN membership. France went as far as to induce hyperinflation by flooding the country with counterfeit bills, all the while funding armed anti-government resistance. Yeah, it got pretty crazy. The plan ultimately failed to dislodge Sékou Touré, but Guinea's economy never fully recovered. Likewise, when Togo had a change of heart and sought to ditch the CFA franc, France made another example, this time without loose ends. Togo's leader, Sylvanos Olympio, was assassinated in January 1963. French involvement is suspected, but official records remain conveniently closed. Of itself, further attempts to conceal French imperialism followed. The CFA franc was split into two currencies covering the Central and West African states. By the mid-1970s, their respective central banks were Africanized and moved to Yaoundé and Dakar. Though local Africans staffed these institutions, there were no fundamental policy changes, and France retained veto power over the banks' governing statutes. This included a requirement that member states deposit half their exchange reserves at the French treasury, plus another 20% for financial liabilities, meaning member states retained access only to 30% of their money. Moreover, all foreign exchange conversions were to pass through the French treasury. The way this fiscal policy works is by operations accounts. These are special accounts held at the French treasury. The denominations are in euros, but when accounts are in credit, the African central banks effectively place their foreign exchange reserves at France's disposal. But when the central banks' accounts are in debit, they are obligated to pay interest to the French treasury. In other words, CFA member states pay France to hold on to their money. Even more unsettling, no one knows what France does with the money. The French Treasury does not disclose this information even to CFA franc nations. So, it wouldn't be out of the ordinary if France were to reinvest African funding for French profit. However, one looks at it, the CFA scheme is an effective moneymaker for France, and French businesses benefit as much as the French Treasury. More specifically, France doesn't need to draw on its foreign exchange reserves for African imports. Dozens of French multinationals are present in Africa, including TotalEnergies, Areva, and Vinci. Africa also grants France access to strategic resources like uranium, which is indispensable for France's nuclear energy sector, meeting three-quarters of French energy needs. Meanwhile, Gabon is a source of crude oil, Mauritania delivers iron ore, while Togo and Benin provide agricultural commodities. Additionally, the icing on the cake, French national Vincé Bolloré owns most of West Africa's major ports. It is thus not by incident that former French president Jacques Chirac once stated that much of the money in French banks comes precisely from exploiting Africa, and that France would lose its global standing without its African empire. To preserve its hegemony, France has intervened militarily on the continent 40 times since the 1960s, from propping up corrupt dictators to conducting military operations in the Sahel.
And then they call us the poorest country. In Africa, you cannot get anything with credit here. Everything here, you can get a credit card, like I can put it on credit. Africa, you gotta have cash to pay for everything you have. And then you have the nerve to call African countries poor. No, we're not poor. We just don't have better leaders. We just have leaders who are greedy. They will feed their own family and let everyone suffer at the bottom.
Yeah.
That's what we have. So that's why I feel like even Nigeria has the most population of youth. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And the world is so afraid of that because like the youth are the ones who are going to change tomorrow.
And even Kenya right now, the youths are even like
look at the youth
over,
exactly.
Right? Because
that's what they don't
are
like.
Tired.
Africa is the most amount of youth.
It's like too. It gets even with the Kenyan situation that I was looking at when they had this whole thing, kill the bill.
Mm-hmm.
Look at how bad it was. Like you're an officer. Someone, okay, who is not even paying your salary. Maybe your salary is paid by these people that you're killing. It's the tax, you know, the tax money is coming from the, these citizens that you're treating like that. And then you're shooting these young people. Like, you're, like, putting all the tear gas and mystery. It was so bad. Like, you could see, like, people carrying, like, dead bodies.
Have you seen what's happening in Kenya? The president has now dropped a super controversial law to raise taxes. It seems he's finally bowed to pressure from protesters who've been really angry about it. On Tuesday, it all turned violent when police used live gunfire and tear gas against protesters in the capital, Nairobi. Several people were killed. Here's the backstory. Kenya's President William Ruto said the government needed more money to fund its budget and pay interest on the country's huge debt. But when a new finance bill was proposed back in May, many Kenyans said they just can't afford to pay anymore. An opposition movement grew online at first, especially among young Kenyans on platforms like TikTok, where they accused Ruto's government of overspending while asking for more money off regular people. Then, street protests spread across the country.
Children, I mean, we can't even afford diapers for the kids anymore.
They had some impact. The government dropped some of its most controversial tax hikes, like a 16% tax on bread. And they changed another tax on things that cause plastic waste, including diapers and sanitary pads, so that it only applies to imported goods.
How can you tax sanitary towels? How?
On Tuesday, Parliament voted on the bill. It passed. But outside, thousands of protesters gathered. Some people broke into the building. Part of it was set on fire. And in response, police fired tear gas and live bullets. President Ruto initially described what happened as
treasonous events.
But on Wednesday, he said he wouldn't take the next step and sign the bill into law. He also promised to engage with young Kenyans and their views on the way forward for the country.
To have a conversation as a nation going forward, how do we manage the affairs of the country together? How do we manage our debt situation together?
Dead boat.
so mad. I don't even know why I'm mad. Like, I'm just so frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when I say enough is enough, enough is enough. I feel like if you're racist to me, the way I'll give you bicycles, you will not even believe it. And like, I'm not coming from a bad place.
Mm.
I just feel like as a person, I have so much history. I come from the richest country in the world. My country is rich.
Mm-hmm.
Minerals,
mm-hmm.
gold, diamond, copper, we have it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But this is the problem. Like you said, poor leadership,
mm-hmm.
right? We are so willing to like move other countries forward that we are forgetting our, and we are forgetting
think,
our own countries.
I don't think it's like moving our country forward. I feel like it's just, it's greed.
It
and
is
then it's
greed.
Just one person. I have to get, like, if they get into power, you see it every time that you get, you see their vision, they're telling you this is what they're pitching, this is what I'm going to do for you, this is what I'm going to do for the people. As soon as they get into power, it's just me and my family. That's what I'm saying, like.
They fly their kids to the Western countries.
But then,
provide
like,
better education, provide better housing.
Robert Mugabe said it best. He's like, Africans, they are so, like, I don't know, they're very much, I don't think he said materialistic, but he said in the line of like, we will go to Dubai for shopping, we will go to US for school, we will go to India for medicine, we will go get buried in Africa.
Thank you.
Africa is just a burial site.
It's a land where we receive the unwanted.
Basically. And then like,
but you know what, one thing that I love about my continent is that as a people, yeah, we have our own flaws, like just like every other country.
Every other country has
it. But this is where I'm coming from. If they want to support a certain movement, they will support it.
Mm-hmm.
Look how Kenya people came out.
Yeah, they came good.
Yeah, they came out. Look how Nigeria people came out when the exercise was going on,
mm-hmm.
when so many things were happening. They had this other thing going on, and a lot of people came out. And I think that's important. As a continent, we are able to support other people even from where we are.
Mm-hmm.
But as a people, we are failing our own people.
Yeah.
Like, look at it. How many businesses are in this country? How many people do you see going in those businesses that are people of color?
No.
We've started this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
How many people, even from our own
communities,
mm-hmm. have supported us?
None.
None. But then when they see you're at a better place than they expected
mm-hmm.
you would be, then that's when they start coming.
Yeah.
And I think that's where as people we are failing.
Mm-hmm.
Look at this topic of racism that has been going on, right? It's a topic that people are now starting to come out and say it,
mm-hmm.
right? I remember when I first came here to Canada, my first racism-ish attack was in the bus.
Mm-hmm.
And that traumatized me, and the way I viewed, racism, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what I can say is that racism is gonna be there. It's never gonna end. It's an issue that no matter how you raise your voices, no matter what you do, no, it's always gonna be there. But how you handle it as a person,
mm-hmm.
and how you tackle the issue as a person, determines the solution that's gonna come out. Determines actually how those people are gonna react back. I just feel like instead of us focusing on things like racism,
mm-hmm.
that's never gonna end, maybe we should put that energy into moving our own countries forward.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should start building more back home.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe like two or three people come together and build a school. Maybe two or three people that are rich, that are well-made, come together and build a medical university in
mm-hmm.
their own countries. I think as a continent, we will move forward.
Yeah, but like African people, like when it's time for them to like go back home, they have to be like, oh, I have to save up this much for me to be able to go back. No, you can still, with that little, you know how money here stretches back home?
A lot.
It stretches a long way where you could be like doing so many things like for the community, within the community.
Yeah.
And the thing is, even us, like, as immigrants, like, we come here as immigrants, right? The thing is, even with the Canadians, like, you see with the immigration policies, what's happening. Now, before, like, immigrants, we used to all feel the same how we used to, like, the way we'd be treated and stuff. Now I see other immigrants, like, with the Indian situation, with the Indian immigrants.
Mm.
We are doing the same shit that other groups did to us.
Yes.
which is disgusting. You shouldn't blame them for coming here for the opportunity they came here. You should blame the what is this, the parliament, the House of Parliament, and what their policies they're making. So people don't look at the bigger picture, think, oh, they're just letting anyone here. No, look at the policy, what they have the right to be here because of the policies that Trudeau have signed. So how dare you gonna like criticize them and say stuff, come at them when they're not even the ones who came up with those policies. So like, it's just like, it's disgusting.
And it's closing the topic. For me, I think, I don't know, like, I don't know how I feel the whole world thing. Like, there's so many things happening in the world. But as a people, you need to fix yourself first before, like, you need to point your finger, because you know every time you point at something, there's like three more, four more fingers pointing back at you. And that states something. Before you point your fingers at someone else, you need to tackle what's wrong with you. What are you doing that is different?
Definitely.
And what are, and whatever you're doing, how is it going to impact the other person's life? I think when we start looking at our inner selves before looking at others, then as a people, we're gonna do better.
For me, for my last like closing statement, I would say like, look at all the policy, they're all aligned. We all aligning. All this, like, we are fighting for Palestine, we're fighting for, what is this? There's so many countries.
Ethiopia,
Somali. Congo, and Somalia. Everything lies in Congo. Let me tell you why. Congo has all, like, he has the most amount of gold, right? Israel is getting the gold. It has like the most distribution site of gold, and they take it from Congo. And then they're using that money to attack people there, people in Gaza, and people in Palestine. So like, you have to think, everything is always connected. There's a reason why they do that. And there's like a bigger picture at play, and then we just don't see it. So like, people, I would say like, do your research and see what's going on around the world. Don't just go based on opinions. You have to have your own mind and think for yourself as well. And also be alert, especially nowadays, there's a lot of things that's going on. It's like, it's undercover, like it's there, it's clear in plain sight, but we're just not willing to do the research. We want someone else to come here and talk to us and tell us what's going on. Like, do your own research and understand what's going on around the world. Understand your policies, get into like the what is happening within your community. Because those policies will affect you. You'll be like, oh, it might not affect me, it's going to affect the other group. No, you're next. Just know what can happen to this group can also happen to you. And also, like, this thing I see, like, on TikTok, the black people facing Palestine, it doesn't even make sense.
Like, you all need to calm down.
You all need to, yeah, it's just like, none of, either, like, Kamala, oh, what is the orange man? Trump. None of them have their, like, what is this? The best interest for you guys.
Yeah, no one.
If you look at their policies, they ain't shit. So there's no, like, whichever one you're gonna get. Whatever they already planned out, it's gonna
happen. It's gonna happen, trust me.
So just vote the best as you can, or go vote for a third party. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
Anyway, Rafiki, it's been a
A very emotional topic, but we are so glad that we got to talk about this, and I hope you guys learned something. If you have any comments or you want to DM us any story at all, please do not forget to send us your relatable story on our Instagram DM. And do not forget to subscribe, share, and of course click that notification button to get all the new episodes every Sunday.
Click there.
Otherwise, Rafiki,
secret watchers.
Bye.